Welcome to Another Day, Another Adventure, a podcast dedicated to covering every Dragon Ball cartoon ever. I'm your host, Colton, and with me, as always, is my good friend, Sakaki.
Yo.
I was going to ask you how it's going, but we both know how it's going, and unfortunately, it's not going great.
Yeah, sadly, you know, besides the fact that we haven't been able to record for a while, which we're really sorry, but, you know, life, this episode... It has a dual purpose here, one that we are still alive and we do plan to get back to recording soon because this show's a ton of fun and we're glad to have you on this adventure with us. But the other reason why we're doing this episode is a little less fun.
Yes, yes. I just want to echo what Sakaki said that, yes, I do want to apologize for the silence on our end. That is genuinely all my fault. Life gets in the way. I have other podcasting projects that I'm involved in that unfortunately do take up a lot of my time. But, I mean, we might as well get into it because obviously if you're listening to this, you know why we're here. And unfortunately, it's not a good reason because as of March 1st, 2024, Akira Toriyama, creator of Dragon Ball and so many other wonderful things, also contributed to such classic video games as Dragon Quest, Chrono Trigger. And let's not forget, also the author of Dr. Slump, unfortunately, has passed away. So.
Yeah, like it was definitely a moment of where were you when you heard the news? And, you know, I think I don't want to take credit for breaking it so much as I think I was the first one to see it. And that was the thing where it was like I saw it on Twitter from the official Dragon Ball account. So, you know, that should be. It's just such a thing that he's the kind of guy that has his presence that I said it on several social media sites and on Discord and everything. I expected him to outlive me. I expected him to be this little wrinkled old man at like 90, you know, and my family's around my deathbed and he's still there just cranking out more Dragon Ball shit. So that surprised me more than anything. And then, you know, even though it was from the official source, I was like, no, there's going to be a joke. Somebody's hacked the account or something like that. And then we started getting the Japanese account retweeted it. And then we started getting words from other mangaka. And then it was like, yeah, then there was no way around it. It happened. We didn't find out till the Thursday.
Yeah.
Thursday. What was the date on Thursday?
I believe that was the, I'm going to look this up real quick because I don't remember off the top of my head.
It was the 7th.
Yeah, that was the 7th.
Yeah, so he actually passed away the 4th, as far as we know. And I mean, well, not as far as we know, but
I thought it was the 1st.
The 1st. I'm sorry. I'm thinking. So, yeah, I mean, another thing, this is kind of a side thing, but also very popular voice actress Tarako passed away. That news came out almost exactly like a day after Toriyama. She passed away the 4th, but we didn't find out till the 8th. So that's who I'm mixing up here. Colton is correct. He passed away the 1st, and she passed away the 4th, but the reports didn't come out till days later.
Yeah, assumedly, because I'm sure that Toriyama's family probably really wanted the time to kind of grieve on their own. You know, and not have to share their time of grieving, you know, their mourning with the whole rest of the world. Because I could see how that would be kind of overwhelming.
Yeah, no, I don't blame it. I mean, like, and especially with Japanese news, they're very much, I feel like if it had been the US, TMZ would have reported hours after it happened. So, like, we would have all probably found out the 1st. But Japanese news is very good at keeping tight-lipped until they're ready to talk about something we won't know.
It came out literally earlier today, the day we're recording this, that apparently Toriyama did win the Lifetime Achievement Award at Tokyo Anime Award Festival 2024. And I guess apparently he was chosen as the winner back in December, I believe, and that they were going to actually give him the award a couple months later. But, you know, obviously he passed away before then, but he was able to give a comment on him winning the award. And we don't have to go through the whole thing because it is kind of a long comment, but I guess just to kind of summarize the bullet points, obviously we'll link this in the show notes because Konzenchu obviously hopped on this and they have their own translation up, which obviously we trust their work. But I guess as far as like bullet points go, Toriyama mentions basically all throughout most of his comment that that he's kind of in disbelief about winning the award because it's specifically for like anime and animation. And yeah, he just kind of talks about how, like, basically how in disbelief he is because, like, he even admits in the comment that while Dragon Ball was on TV that he didn't really catch a lot of it. Because, you know, there was a time before, you know, Battle of Gods started up. It basically, the super era of the franchise started up where he was starting to get, like, a little more involved in the content. Where, you know, back in the heyday of this franchise, he's been pretty open about leaving the anime stuff up to the anime staff. And really, as far as I remember, the only stuff he's contributed to a lot of the older movies and stuff is, oh, he'll help design the bad guy and give them more like character designs to work with, but outside of that, he wasn't really involved in much else.
Yeah, which is that sounds to be about the typical mangaka involvement. I mean, nowadays you see it way more where they're like actually writing the story and like contributing way more than just a few character designs here or there. Like, I think that I don't remember how much he was involved, but Tatsuya Endo with the Spy Fan movie, I remember him. I think he like wrote the original outline for the plot or something like that. And then of course we all know Oda, who's like basically writing the movies himself at this point. And even Sorachi, who like wrote the second Gintama movie. So nowadays you see the mangaka being much more involved with their work. And I kind of have to wonder a little bit if it was because of Toriyama, like kind of taking the helm back after the, you know, the debacle that was the DB live action, which ironically, the guy that played Goku actually even came out with an apology for ruining the franchise, which... Sure. I mean, like, I know I'm making it sound like he doesn't. I assume he's like legitimately, genuinely sorry. And I remember reading somebody saying that it's really sad that he feels that way because it really should be the studio, not him.
No, I was going to say, this is a whole other tangent, but I don't really blame any of the actors in particular. I mean, with any bad movie, actors are just kind of working with what they're given. And the guy who wrote the script, I know years ago at this point, came out and basically apologized for his work. And I think mentioned that it was just kind of a paycheck for him. Like he didn't really exactly understand like the full weight of like what he was working on until much later. But I mean, that's neither here nor there. The biggest reason I wanted to bring this up is this is one of those things where... And again, I'm sorry, we're going to be all over the place. Like, normally I have, like, bullet points and a list of stuff that I know I want to bring up on every episode. But for this, we're kind of just kind of going off the cuff. I'm kind of following my heart on this one. So I'm sorry if this episode is going to be disorganized. But this is essentially going to be kind of a therapy session for the both of us. I'm just coming to grips with the fact that, unfortunately, Toriyama is gone. And one thing that, like, makes it hurt even more, again, this comment from the awards that came out literally earlier today, the very last bit, like, hurt me the most, and I guess I'll just read it word for word, because Toriyama says, "Finally, thank you so much to all the fans who have supported me up until now. Perhaps because of my lifestyle when I was younger, I have no real confidence in my health, and I don't know how much more I'll be able to do, but I'll do my best aiming to make even more enjoyable work, so please keep supporting me from here on out."
Damn.
The thing that hurts about this comment in particular is because I think there were a couple of days where, like, we kind of knew vaguely, like, how he passed away. But it was one of those things where, like, we didn't really know the circumstances. But from everything we've learned, it just seems like, oh, well, he's been in poor health for, it seems like, a while. And I think a lot of people are speculating that all that work that he put in, you know, during his Shonen Jump days, not just with Dr. Slump, but also with Dragon Ball, I think, you know, unfortunately, the grind of being a mangaka, I think a lot of people are assuming that was finally catching up with him in a way, which is sad because, like, it really seems like he was still creating stuff and drawing stuff, like, up until the end. He still had so much more to give. And that, I think, out of anything, it's just, like, one of the many things that, like, makes his death just that much sadder to me. And I just kind of don't know how to take that.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's definitely a thing where it's, like, I'm almost positive that if he were still here, he'd be telling stories for the indefinite future. Like, it seemed like even though a lot of what he's known for is just seeming burnt out on Dragon Ball, I feel like in a small way, he always had a small place in his heart for the franchise. Because, like, yeah, there are just as many stories about him enjoying Dragon Ball and what the world that he created within Dragon Ball, as much as there are stories of just him being like, I don't want to draw manga anymore. And, yeah, it just feels like he was finally giving back that energy that the fans have been giving him. Because, like, Colton and I were talking about it after he passed. And just, like, you know, another notable figure, obviously, that's comparable to this is Kentaro Miura. And, I mean, I definitely, we're not going to do power scaling of mangaka fandoms. But, like, I mean, Miura had his, obviously, and a lot of people were really saddened by that. But Toriyama just feels like he's a whole nother level. You have so many people coming out the woodwork saying that he's the reason why I got into drawing. Dragon Ball's the reason why I did this, or Dragon Ball encouraged me to do that. Like, I found out Judy Totoya, like the character designer for Sonic the Hedgehog, like, I realized already that Super Sonic and the Seven Chaos Emeralds were obviously inspired by Dragon Ball, but I didn't know. Like, Totoya-san came out and said that, oh, yeah, by the way, Sonic and Tails are basically very much or heavily inspired by Piccolo and Gohan. And in retrospect, looking back at them, I'm like, yeah, no, I can see it. That was another thing. And of course, I mean, I knew the thing with Arale and Mario, like the way that Mario runs in the Tanuki suit is inspired by Arale from Dr. Slump. So both Sonic and Mario can take their inspirations from Akira Toriyama.
No, not even just the Tanuki suit. Honestly, the more I really think about it and the more I pay attention, like, there's so much Arale DNA in Mario.
I mean, honestly, yeah.
It's kind of amazing that, and obviously, I'm sure, like a lot of Dragon Ball fans, I definitely took my own long time to finally get around to Dr. Slump. We did a Manga Mavericks episode about it, I think last year or the year before, I already don't remember. But, so, you know, it took a while for me to kind of get around to it. But now that I have, yeah, I definitely see the influence that Dr. Slump had on Mario, which, honestly, is kind of insane to think about.
Yeah, like, I mean, now I still need to get on Dr. Slump, I'm promising to read Dr. Slump. But just the bit I know from just anecdotal experience and stuff I've read, I can definitely see how Shigeru Miyamoto had to be, like, somewhat inspired by it when creating the Mushroom Kingdom. Like, there's so many things that just make a lot of sense when you look at it, when you really just think about it.
Yeah, I was going to say, like the way that Mario's overall world is designed, like, yeah, I honestly could see it being very inspired by the way Toriyama formed the settings of Dr. Slump, especially with, like, Penguin Village and stuff. And I don't know, I feel like I haven't seen anybody talk about it, but, like, I feel like there has to be something there.
Yeah, no, I'm kind of surprised nobody at Nintendo said anything like Totoya from Sega did, which is interesting. But I mean, we're still kind of at a phase where people are still mourning, so I wouldn't be surprised if little things start coming out. Because, like, mangaka, obviously, like I said earlier, what really set it in for me that it was real, seeing some of the, like, Shueisha immediately put up a site with mangaka comments on it. And obviously, for them to put it up so quickly, it's obvious that they knew, you know, for some time. But they were probably holding back on releasing any information until, you know, the family deemed that they could. Because, like, Oda had a really long comment, Kishimoto did too. Masakazu Katsura as well, and those were just the ones, and obviously the Dragon Ball voice actors and actresses were also informed. Like, I mean, Masako Nosawa, it took her a few days to even just have something to say, because, like, you could even go as far as saying that Akira Toriyama and her are Goku's parents. I mean, one of Toriyama's last words was, like, I can leave Goku in your care, right? So she was just too shocked to speak.
Yeah, I mean, I don't blame her. Like, just kind of going back to when I first saw the news, because I'm not gonna lie. Like, Thursday night was a rare night where I had to actually go into work, and it was a very busy night at work. And I had finally got out. I finally tried to catch my breath after spending most of the day in the kitchen making food and all that, you know. And I get on my phone and I see that I think it was either you or Jekka that
it was me. Yeah.
Okay. And I saw the tweet, and, like, my first response was just hand over my mouth and just screaming, no, like, this is not real. Like, it's so, I've never been, like, presented with the death of, I feel like, almost anyone in my life, where I've had such a hard time just, like, accepting that, like, oh, he's just gone. And it's for me personally, it's been, Sakaki can attest to this, it's been a real, like, few emotional days for me. I had the initial shock Thursday night when we received the news over there, over here in North America. And obviously, I did my fair share of crying. Sakaki offered to talk to me. We had a nice chat. Well, as nice as you can have a chat about, you know, someone who...
Yeah, one of your heroes, you know, dying, you know.
Personally speaking, meant a lot to me that I'm... Yeah.
Yeah, no.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say one of your heroes dying, you know, like... It's one of those things where it's like, you just don't think it can ever happen. Like I said, I'm personally not joking where I just always thought he'd always be there. Like, the idea of Akira Toriyama passing away at all, whether he outlives me or not, is just an idea of just like, no, that just doesn't happen. He's always going to be there in some way. And in a way he is, because I mean, like, his legacy is going to live on forever. I think that who was that? Yeah, it was Kubo who said it. I won't go through all the mangaka things because obviously, you know, there are a bunch of them and we can just link them in the notes. But like some of the ones I've seen have been like, I know Kubo said that essentially he's not really dead because his ideas will live on forever. And, you know, and I agree with that, you know, sentiment, but it's still just the idea of this person not being there anymore.
No. Yeah. Funny enough, it kind of makes me. I can't help but think about that scene from One Piece during Drum.
Oh, Dr. Hiruluk. God.
Yeah, where Hiruluk says something along the lines of basically, you're never dead as long as you're...
Yeah, as long as you're remembered and that he had a good life. And of course, Oda had like a beautiful eulogy for him. I don't remember the whole thing, but the last line is still just sits with me. You know, may heaven be as wonderful as you envisioned it. And then Kishimoto even was just like, I don't know if I can even go back to reading Dragon Ball at this point. Like, it's a whole part of my life. And then even Tsubasa Fukuchi, who's not even a Jump mangaka, like, I translated his comment over the weekend and he straight up said, I gave up on life twice, but it was the dream that you gave me that kept me going. You know, and he had a whole call to action where he was like, I know you don't know who I am, but I'm Tsubasa Fukuchi and I'm a mangaka because of you. And that's something I didn't know. I mean, like, I am the Fukuchi fanboy. I wear that badge with pride. I knew that he's a big fan of Takahashi, and he's actually been to her house. But I had no idea that Dragon Ball influenced him this much. Like, his initial comment when the news came out, because obviously a few people knew. And then when the news hit, like, everybody knew. And his initial reaction was just like, my God died. You know, I'm having trouble accepting this. And then Fukuchi, who's huge on Twitter, just was silent for an entire day. And then when he finally wrote a longer comment, like he said, you know, I've been crying the whole day trying to get my mind straight.
Yeah. Big same.
Yeah, no. Well, like when I was translating it, I was thinking of you and I was just like, yeah, Fukuchi and you, like, same, you know, it's a thing where it's just like, I almost didn't want to write out to translate the comment just because it was just like, this is so heavy. And as the guy that has to convey these words to somebody else, it's like making sure that I'm getting the nuance correctly, what he's saying correct. I've never translated anything so heavy in my life. It was a thing where even though it was just a tweet, it was just, I almost didn't want to do it. But then I see that everybody else is translating every Jump mangaka and everything like that. And I did translate Shirachi's as well. But every Jump mangaka was getting translated. And I'm like, no, somebody needs to do the other mangaka they're looking, you know, that are out there and mourning his passing. Because, like, there's even Urasawa, who everybody can agree is like one of the greats. Even he said he read Dr. Slump when it first started. And he was like, this guy's going to change how manga is read.
And he was 100% right.
He was like, he said that to himself, like, just from chapter one chapter of Dr. Slump, he was like, no, this guy's amazing. And then even then, he was just like, I didn't know how amazing you'd become. And I mean, Urasawa said he never got to meet him and he wished he had, but it didn't, you know, he just, and again, this is Urasawa, not Shueisha. He's in another league of his own. And even he's like, this guy is one of the greats. You know, there have been lots of artwork from other mangaka that just haven't said anything. I mean, I'm still... Like, I actually did, I forgot to tell you, but, like, Kenjiro Hata, who drew Hayate the Combat Butler, his only tweet was just, what? And then I happened to look it up again to see if he said anything else. He was like, and still, like, a day later, he was like, I just don't know what to say. Feels like I'm in a dream. So.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I know you have, like, a roadmap of what you wanted to talk about, so sorry for derailing it.
No, that's fine. I honestly, that's actually completely not true because I kind of don't. I don't know. This is mostly just going to be kind of us just kind of recording in the moment and like, I don't know, just kind of get our feelings out there because I think we both have been kind of doing that for basically the whole weekend.
Yeah.
And it was just one of those things where it's like, man, yeah, I definitely think we should like sit down and at least talk about this and pay some sort of tribute. But at the same time, I think I told you like, hey, I would like to do something. I would like to pay tribute somehow. But at the same time, man, I need a few days to get over this. And I think I'm feeling a little better. But the thing is, because I, you know, just like Fukuchi, I pretty much cried on and off like the whole rest of the day afterwards. Like I just spent so much time on Twitter seeing everybody. It feels like everybody on the planet Earth just like eulogizing Toriyama and talk about like how much he meant to them as artists or how much their works meant to them and, you know, how influential he's been across like multiple different mediums, not even just comics, you know?
Oh, yeah, no.
And just seeing all this love being poured out by what feels like, I'm going to say like 99% of Twitter, because there was a time where like my timeline, it really just felt like all Toriyama stuff. I think it's kind of died down a little bit since then, but still, like even today, I've been seeing like art tributes kind of here and there of, you know, his little Tori bot persona, you know, flying around on Kintoon or, you know, saying goodbye to Goku and Arale, like all the typical kind of stuff that you would expect from something like this. But, you know, it's all nice. I've loved seeing... In the middle of all of this, I remember seeing a tweet where somebody said something along the lines of like, seeing everybody mourn and eulogize Toriyama is like the closest thing that I've ever seen to like world peace. And like, that sounds like hyperbole, but I do think there's a lot of truth to that.
Yeah, no, I remember you told us about that tweet and it's like, I believe it. I haven't seen... I mean, like, even with different publishers, I saw Kodansha put out a tweet eulogizing him. Of course, Viz made their, you know, they live and die off that guy. But Kodansha, Yen Press, all these people that have never, like, Yen Press and Kodansha, who have never printed a Toriyama work and never probably will, even they realize the effect he's had on the industry.
I guarantee you if Funimation were still around, they would have said something.
Yeah. No, 100%, because like I remember reading a tweet that even said that selling the rights to air Dragon Ball Z on Cartoon Network is what saved the studio. Because like I feel like I don't know how true this is, but I did see a tweet somebody saying that they were in pretty bad shape, and then they sold the rights to air DBZ to Cartoon Network, and that's what made them survive as long as they did.
Mm-hmm. I'm assuming it probably helped Cartoon Network quite a lot, too. Like, I'm sure they were doing fine. Like, they were obviously still on the air. But, like, I'm sure the... What was it? What was the statistic in that one promo? I'll have to find it. Where I think the Toonami announcer's like, oh, 65 million fans can't be wrong or whatever.
Yeah. Again, yeah, I agree. That like, this is... I've seen, of course, one or two... I don't want to call them bad players because, like... I mean, with timing aside... You know, he wasn't a perfect person. There are some things that perhaps that are legitimately like, yeah, he could have done better here, or some depictions of, you know, certain characters or stuff that you could say that, yeah, you know, that wasn't a good look. So he wasn't a perfect man. So I don't want to call somebody who's saying, you know, who has a legitimate grievance with stuff. I you could make the argument that, yeah, you know, this isn't the time we're trying to mourn him. But at the same time, it's like, I don't want to take somebody's agency away to make a legitimate grievance of him. At the same time, I also can't say, oh, well, this is not the time for it or whatever, because like, you know, once a guy passes away, you know, I forgot who said it, but it's like there's a saying that it's like the one person you can never defeat is a dead guy. And, you know, once that person has passed, no matter how much and what you think of them at that point, it's always going to be like, well, he's gone. Like, what more can you expect from them? So I definitely don't want to make it sound like that these people that have legitimate points. There definitely are some bad players that, you know, they're just saying it because, hey, I can get some clicks out of this. But overall, the internet's been 99.9% just like whether you're an artist or you're in video games or what, no matter what industry you're in, even if you're just a normal guy who just happened to like Goku, everybody's had something to just say that Dragon Ball has done something for them. And that's just, I mean, besides all the mangaka stuff, which I know you and I were kind of talking about who we wanted to hear stuff from, which I'm kind of surprised we haven't heard anything from. I think you said Horikoshi?
Yeah, Horikoshi, Togashi.
Mm. Horikoshi, Togashi, and then from Sunday, I said Aoyama and Takahashi.
Yeah, Aoyama, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I know Aoyama's busy with like promoting the newest Conan movie, but I would not be surprised if he comes up with an illustration eventually, because that definitely seems like the thing he'd do.
Yeah, I'm sure there'll be something eventually. Not like anybody's on a timetable, obviously, because, you know, we all take our own individual amount of time to grieve. I really don't want to make this like, here's what really grinds my gears kind of thing. But one thing I kind of kept seeing from a few people that I follow a few days after Toriyama's passing, because obviously a lot of people's timelines are going to be all like 99% Toriyama eulogies and tributes and whatnot. And, you know, some people I follow would be like, hey, sorry for posting all this Toriyama stuff. And all I could think was like, I mean, first off, I don't think, and my personal opinion is I don't think anybody should apologize for the stuff they post on their own account. It's your account. You should be able to do whatever you want. And I kind of live by that as far as like, you know, whatever I do on social media, just in general. But also it's like, you know, some people are more hit by this than others. For some people, Toriyama was just a guy that happened to be semi-involved in creating a cartoon that they really liked as a kid. And that's valid. If that's your only connection to him, and you just kind of liked Dragon Ball as a kid, but it hasn't really stuck with you since then, that's totally valid. I know people like that. But then there are people like, say, me, who it kind of followed me into my adulthood. And I'm literally not surrounded, but like, I have Dragon Ball figures on my desk. I have a whole pile of manga and DVDs and video games right in front of me, just because I just kind of felt like having stuff on my desk to kind of look at and remind myself of him, you know, while we were recording. But yeah, no, it's like, I feel like nobody should be apologizing for eulogizing Toriyama. If they want to do it 24/7 for the next week, I feel like we should let them. And I don't know, that's just something that kind of rubbed me the wrong way somehow. Like, and I get it. Like, some people are more, I guess, not insecure. That's not the word I want to use. That's too harsh.
Some people were there. And again, it's a thing. It's a line you want to toe, because we definitely don't want to make it sound like if you just don't care about Dragon Ball that you're the bad guy, or not even just Dragon Ball. If like there's none of Toriyama's works that maybe you've never read them, or you've read them and they just didn't do anything for you. Like, we definitely want to make you sound like the bad guy, you know, just like, I understand what you're saying, that, you know, people shouldn't apologize with what's on their feet, but you also shouldn't feel like, again, it's hard to really kind of encapsulate what I'm trying to say here. But if you're not feeling it, like, you also shouldn't feel like, well, I'm just going to have to sit here and suffer with this, even though it's not really suffering, but you know what I mean?
Yeah. I don't know. The point I'm trying to make is that some of us are going to grieve more than others, and that's totally fine. I don't know. It's even hard for me to say that I've done most of mine, because, like, obviously we're recording about Toriyama right now, and it's just now I'm at the stage right now where I'm mostly fine, but every once in a while I'm going to see a really cute drawing, or look at my figures, or peruse through the art book. What was it called? A Visual History. That Sakaki was so nice enough to get me. Thank you for that, by the way.
Yeah, you're welcome.
You know, just perusing through all of my Dragon Ball stuff and just like seeing all the stuff that I own thanks to this man that created this thing, and it starts to get me teary eyed again. Like this is one of the few deaths in my lifetime where it's really gonna stick with me for like a long time, and I'm not sure if there's ever going to be a time for the rest of my life where I'm just not sad by it in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. Like, this is just, it's really made me think about how I feel about the franchise. Because, I mean, I said it at the beginning when we started this podcast, the very first episode, that, like, pretty much after Z, I was, like, done. Like, when I finished Z on Toonami, I was, like, done. You know, I didn't interact with Dragon Ball or anything like that for years. Like, literally, my first time coming back to the series was for Manga Mavericks. And then at that point, I kind of, like, because I hadn't really read the manga. I was really an anime only. So, like, I read some of Dragon Ball, but none of, like, you know, the Saiyan arc stuff. So, reading that, the entire Saiyan arc, because what I did for that show is I read Saiyan arc to basically the end. And, yeah, it made me realize, wow, I actually am back in this again. And then so when we started up this show, obviously, it was after that point, and I was like, you know, no, I'm actually invested in Dragon Ball again. And now it's at a point where I want to kind of spread out and see more Toriyama's works. I mean, I've seen Sandland in theaters when it premiered in L.A., which, yeah, we were even talking about that the other day. Like, it, I guess now the TV show's the way they're going to do it, and rather than a theatrical release, because it unfortunately didn't do so well in Japan. So I wouldn't be surprised if that influenced their decision to rather doing it the theatrical releases instead to just have it on Disney Plus. Because what it sounds like the Disney Plus thing is going to do is like the first, I think, six episodes are just going to be the movie cut into parts, and then the rest of it, because it's going to be 13 episodes total. And I guess the rest of it's going to be like a post-movie events. And to think that like Toriyama was working on all of this stuff while still ill, even.
Yeah, because literally, I want to say like a day or two before he passed away, or at least, you know, before we got the news, he had even done like a new Sandland illustration.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. He did. And to think that that might be his last illustration.
Maybe, yeah. I mean, I guess we'll see, because like the thing is too, right, is that like he was in the middle of like contributing to like a bunch of stuff, like with Sandland. I think some Dragon Quest stuff. I could be wrong about that. I don't know off the top of my head. That's another thing too. I really want to get into Dragon Quest at some point. That's like Sakaki and I are actually watching the adaptation of the Jump manga Dragon Quest: The Adventures of Dai. Not necessarily done by Toriyama, but it is a series based off of a video game franchise that he was involved in the designs for. So Toriyama adjacent, but that's been a lot of fun. I've been enjoying that. But I still need to actually like play some of the games. I know I played a little bit of one. I wish I could remember which one it is. I've actually been looking into like seeing like, oh, you know, which games are like the most recommended and like what are the best ways to play them. I guess a lot of them are on mobile and I'm sure they're fine. But if I could find like, you know, the physical versions of these games, I'd rather do that. But that's neither here nor there. Dragon Quest is something I really wanted to get into. And obviously, you know, going back to all the stuff that he's been involved in, like, he was obviously very involved in something that we haven't had a chance to talk about that I think we were going to come on to talk about, but that we just never got around to. Everybody knows this at this point, but like Dragon Ball is getting a new show at the end of this year with Dragon Ball Daima. Compared to everything else that he's been involved in for the past 10 years, it really sounded like he was like the most involved in this, like to the point where like he was contributing designs, helping with the story, even checking over some of the animation. Like it seemed like he was actually pretty passionate about this project in particular.
Yeah, no, like I know I said it earlier where he kind of came back into the fold after the live action movie happened. You know, a lot of his contributions during that time were mostly just, you know, character designs, little story here and there or whatever. But it sounds like with Daima, he was like throwing himself completely into this work. And I mean, it kind of makes sense because it seems like it harkens back to original Dragon Ball a lot, not just with Kid Goku, but the fact it seems like it's going to be more about martial arts than, you know, guys with spiky yellow hair throwing lasers at each other.
I almost kind of wonder if it's like a series refresh almost, because that's kind of what it feels like.
Yeah, no, and speaking of that, like, I guess they haven't, it still really hasn't been confirmed, but at least Masako Nozawa has been more or less saying that she's involved with Daima, so, like, we've been wondering if they're going to recast the characters, and at least from what she's been going around on Twitter saying, it sounds like that she's going to still be in it, so, which, you know.
I would be, I would be genuinely shocked. I mean, look, she's also come up with a lot of comments over the past days, you know, basically saying things along the lines of, oh, well, I'm just going to be Goku until I can't, essentially.
Yeah, no. I mean, she's been saying that even before this happened, like to the point that like she's just been wants to keep being involved in the series until she can't even. I mean, say what you want about her. She's a spry old lady, because like even just saying to Mayumi Tanaka that, hey, if you don't want to do Luffy anymore, I'll take him over. So like, and it seems like very much so that she has dedicated to the idea of just being Goku until she can. And I mean, like Toriyama handpicked her, which is something I think I knew but didn't know. It's one of those things where it's like, oh, it makes sense in retrospect, but I don't think I actually knew it until I read it somewhere. Like that he attended to like the auditions for Dragon Ball. And when he heard Nozawa, she was like, she has to be Goku. So, I mean, at that from there, you know, this friendship that they've been like, you know, they've been friends since like Dragon Ball to now, where it's like she's just thinking, I just really think that, I mean, between you and me, I just really think that that is Goku's father and mother.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I totally agree. It goes without saying, but watching Daima is definitely going to be, is going to be an interesting experience. Cause I think before Toriyama's passing, I know a lot of people had mixed feelings about the announcement of this project. Cause I think a lot of people were either, you know, expecting like another movie, or I'm assuming a small subsection of people, you know, were really wanting like a continuation of Super, and not just that, but like adaptations of like the manga only arcs, like, you know, Moro and Granola and all that, which, you know what, fair. I understand why people would want that, but, you know, basically, you know, cause God, there was also that one guy who, when they were announcing Daima at whatever convention it was, I forget, it doesn't really matter. They were also streaming panels, like, online, I think via Twitch, but, like, they would do this thing where, like, they wouldn't stream any of the, like, commercials or promos they would have because of, like, some stupid copyright thing. So you have, like, Dragon Ball YouTubers in the crowd trying to stream whatever thing or promo they're, you know, projecting on the big screen in the room or whatever, and, like, you know, just like the most insufferable people online, just like giving their reactions and like constantly switching back and forth from the promo to their face, being like, oh man, oh, this is so sick, oh man, I can't wait, it's not Moro, but oh, I'm still gonna watch it. Like, God, it's just like the most annoying shit in the world. And I don't even remember where my point I was going was, but no, yeah, watching Daima is going to be interesting because when this was first announced, I think reception was mostly positive, but there were a lot of people who were like, I'm not really sure if I wanted this. But like, I don't know, man, like now that Toriyama's gone, like I was saying earlier, he was still involved with a lot of stuff here and there that like is still yet to come out. And now that stuff is finite. Now there's only like so much Toriyama work out there that is still yet to come out. And like when that's all said and done, when that's all come out, that's it. And that's not really a realization that I had up until like, I think like last night, where it's like, oh yeah, there's still stuff that he's worked on, but like, yeah, once that's it. Like, and I know this is like real far into the future stuff and it doesn't like totally matter right now, but a part of me does kind of wonder like what Dragon Ball is going to be like after his involvement. Cause I mean, obviously like he wasn't involved with the anime projects at first, you know, back in the day. He was very, again, like I was saying, he was very hands-off with those. But like since 2013, like he's always had some kind of involvement as far as like story and characters and like the overall world. Like he was still contributing ideas to like these movies and Super and the Super manga and whatnot. Like his involvement, I think, really helped those products. Like, no matter how you feel about, I guess, like the Super era of the franchise, as I'm going to call it, like, no matter how you feel about it, there's a difference between Dragon Ball with and without Toriyama. And I guess I'm just going to be very interested in seeing, like, how that difference is going to manifest after Daima, I guess. I just can't help but wonder about that kind of stuff.
Yeah, like, I mean, I know you and I talked about it a little bit off mic the other day, but... And I think you made a really good point where I brought up franchises such as Lupin and, God, who's the other one? Oh, Kitaro. Yeah, and, like, I brought up those and how those still seem to thrive. But you brought up the point that, like, Dragon Ball's a more serialized storytelling makes a difference between those franchises a little bit more stark in the fact that, like, Lupin's character is so malleable that you could throw anything at him and it doesn't feel weird. And Kitaro, pretty much, from the one I've watched a bit of the 1996 Kitaro and the 2007 Kitaro, and obviously the entirety of the 2018 one. And while they all do their own thing, they do tend to repeat some of the same stories that the other ones did.
Yeah.
So they might put a little bit of a spin on them to, you know, so it's not exactly the same thing, but they do tend to do the same stories. And you know, for that, it works because new generations are watching them each time.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, Dragon Ball, I just kind of, you made a great point where you were just like, it's not impossible for there to be like the sense of a Dragon Ball handled by somebody else that's very different, but it would just, would it, I guess what I'm just trying to say is.
Basically, I think the issue with Dragon Ball is that it depends on what direction they want to go, because a lot of the stuff we've been getting since 2013 no matter how convoluted it is, it's still supposed to fit somewhere within the timeline of that original manga. Everything that's happened between Battle of Gods and Super and all this stuff is meant to have happened in that 10 years between the end of Buu and the, the 28th tournament that happens at the end. So it really depends on what they want to do, because I'm not against like different interpretations of this franchise. Like, I think that actually might be pretty cool. But I hope if they hire people to do their own interpretations after Daima, if that's the route they want to go, I kind of hope they just kind of do their own thing. Basically, my argument is that Dragon Ball is not the same kind of franchise as a Lupin or Kitaro, or like, for a third example, like Scooby-Doo. All these franchises dabble in kind of one-off stories, one-off adventures, and I think there's a lot more flexibility with how you tell a Lupin story, how you tell, like, a Scooby-Doo story, or whatever. And with Dragon Ball, I think you would have to, like, come at it from a completely different angle and not adhere to, oh, well, this has to be something that happened within the original manga, or something like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I get what you're saying. I mean, like, I get where you're coming from. It's not a thing that's completely impossible, but it's a little bit of a harder ask than it would be some of those other franchises that we mentioned. Because here's the thing, all right? And I'm not going to dwell on this too long. The thing that makes Dragon Ball so timeless is that it's like it doesn't worry itself with being current or hip or anything like that. I mean, Goku himself is just basically a farm boy when you think about it, a boy from the boonies, mm-hmm. And
yeah.
He's introduced to this whole world outside of where what he's used to and everything that they're living by himself. That's part of the timelessness of this series, and that's what one thing that Dragon Ball really has going for it. It's just this work that, even with us watching Dragon Ball now, I've never, other than the fact that, yeah, some of the jokes really haven't aged well, the world and storytelling itself doesn't, it feels just as fresh and interesting as it did when it came out in the 80s.
For sure, yeah.
I mean, recently I was watching the Cell arc with Jetchan, my wife, and like, I've never seen Cell, and I mean, I'm not going to talk too much about it because eventually we will get to it, but like, I've never seen Cell in Japanese, the Cell arc in Japanese, or any of Z in Japanese. And it was still riveting shit, even with Toei's piss-poor pacing, which I understand why that had to be the way it was, but there's still something really gripping about Dragon Ball.
Yeah.
I know we've said it before that Toriyama's the kind of guy that he has this charm that you're willing to look over the fact that it's definitely a thing that he thought of stuff at the last minute, or it's just like, oh yeah, that thing I did, I could bring it back and use it. Like, he has enough charm to get away with that, that you don't think about it too much. But genuinely, just watching the Cell arc again, I was like, this is, it's slow, but it's good. Like, I wanted to see what was going to happen next. I've already seen this arc. I already know how it's going to end, but there's just, Toriyama knew, there's a purposeful sort of whimsy to his storytelling, even in the serious arc with, like, Cell. There's sort of whimsy and silliness and a sense of gravitas that, like, I don't take this too seriously. But when it's time for him to lock in and to tell a different story, it's not like all those things go away and we get like this grim, dark arc where there's nothing funny to be said. I mean, like, Mr. Satan being in that arc is exactly what I'm talking about. He didn't just shoo out the clowns to tell this storytelling. He kept that sense of humor in there. I mean, Cell backhanding Mr. Satan is still the funniest goddamn thing ever. And like Piccolo. God. And Piccolo, like, or I don't know if it was Piccolo or someone else that said it was like, even Cell didn't feel like it was worth killing him.
God. Oh, man. I'm trying to think, because again, I do apologize. I feel like we're kind of all over the place, but it's fine. I don't know, because I feel like we spent a lot of time talking about like the future of Dragon Ball a lot. Not that it's not important, but at the same time, it's like, man, that's so far off. And it's like, we still don't really even have like a full idea of what Daima's going to be like, let alone Dragon Ball's legacy afterwards.
After that, yeah. I mean, we're only today now. They came out the news that Daima is going to be on TV.
Yeah, yeah. Which makes sense, because this is the last Dragon Ball thing that Toriyama's ever going to be involved with. So like, I don't see a reason why you wouldn't put it on TV. Genuinely, I hope they put it on TV everywhere around the world as much as they can, because, like, I would love to see this on, like, Cartoon Network.
Yeah, no, I hope that there's, I mean, obviously it'll be streaming, so you'll have that option, you know, I'm sure like Crunchyroll or whatever will get it. But yeah, I kind of would love to see it be like My Hero Academia or one of these other shows that's on Toonami too. Mm-hmm. You know, as the dub comes out, they also, you can watch it streaming on Crunchyroll, or you could pick up on Toonami like the good old days and watch it there.
Yeah.
You know, yeah,
that'd be great.
I would definitely love to see that. I don't have cable, but I would try my best to watch episodes whenever I can, because I was going to watch Daima anyway, but I'm locked in for sure now. I haven't watched Super yet, but I will 100% watch Daima week to week.
Same. Yeah. And like I was saying earlier, Daima, I was, not that I wasn't excited for it, but I was like cautiously optimistic. I was like, okay, this is not what I was expecting. But I'll still give it a chance. I really want to see how it goes, because it seems like all the staff behind this are working really hard on trying to not only make this look as best as it can, but also like really try to hone in on the different aspects of Dragon Ball that haven't really been focused on in a while, such as like just full on martial arts combat and not just huge transformations and giant beam struggles. As fun as that stuff can be, a lot of people, I think, have taken note that like the franchise in general has been kind of bogged down by a lot of that stuff. It's not really as exciting anymore, at least for some people.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we've reached the point where you kind of have hit as far as you can go with that.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I'm sure that if they really thought about it, they could find a way to keep that going, and it would still be Dragon Ball as usual. But I feel like maybe even Toriyama probably was thinking to himself, like, do we want Dragon Ball as usual? Do we want to hit the, let's hit the refresh button and see where that takes us? And the fact that he is the kind of guy that could do that, have that thought to himself and be like, you know, because, I mean, he could easily have coasted along. People love Goku. Even when the franchise has had its missteps, it's never been so bad that it's just been like completely forgotten. Even that long gap between GT and the next thing, people were still just, they still love Goku.
Yeah, and that's another thing, too. Goku is genuinely up there with other, you know, cartoon characters like, say, SpongeBob or Bugs Bunny or Mickey Mouse, you know, Hello Kitty, like, you know, a character that, like, everybody knows. Even if you aren't into anime or manga, people know who Goku is. And, yeah, like, it really says something when, like, the character you've created has, like, reached that level of, like, I guess, what would you call it? Like, a pop culture fame, I guess, where he's just so, like, ubiquitous and, like, everybody knows who he is. You don't even have to know what Dragon Ball is. Like, people know who Goku is. Like, at this point, Goku has his own balloon in the Macy's Thanksgiving Parade, which I'm not saying is the end-all be-all of, like, pop culture significance, but, I mean, that's not nothing.
Yeah, no. I mean, like, at this point, he's probably going to continue having that thing forever at this point.
I hope so.
Yeah. As long as they had a parade, he'll be a part of it. No, I mean, Goku at this point is just, Toriyama himself, like, is pop culture because, like, we said it before, and like there, he's got his hands in so many different things without even really doing anything, that even if you don't know Dragon Ball, you don't even have to like Dragon Ball. There is something that you like that he indirectly had a part of. Like, he basically, he was the Shanks to the actual Luffy's creator and Kishimoto and Kubo.
Yeah.
Or if not them, like Togashi, for example, is another one who's a huge Dragon Ball fan. I mean, I know lots of people who do not like Dragon Ball, but love Yu Yu Hakusho, love Hunter x Hunter. And Togashi would probably tell them, yeah, but I love Dragon Ball. I mean, you look at Meruem, that is just Cell.
Yeah, and you really pay attention to, and it's almost kind of funny that even while mourning Toriyama's death, we have to bring up Hunter x Hunter like we always do on the show. But like, genuinely, like, I've been rewatching Hunter x Hunter with a friend of mine who's getting into it for the first time. And it's just, it's so hard for me to not see the influence that Goku has had on how Togashi writes Gon as a character in particular.
Yeah, no, like, you know, as I go through different, I've been seeing it on Twitter where there's one panel of, like, Polnareff from JoJo.
Yeah,
that's,
yeah,
taken from a panel of Goku. Even if you want to make the argument that, oh, that's just coincidental, and maybe even Araki could just say, oh, well, nah, it's just coincidental. In his brain, in his DNA, he remembered that panel stuck out to him enough for him to draw something similar to it, even if he never intended to.
For sure. And even stuff like when Polnareff does those hand signs and Kakyoin can understand what they mean, and I think they mean something along the lines of "I could see your panties" or whatever. That's straight up just like a Dr. Slump reference.
Yeah, I mean, there you go. And even last week, I showed it to you, and I know we both forgot to mention it, but like Sleepy Princess did a Dragon Ball parody last week in Shonen Sunday.
That's true.
But yeah, it's just like every corner of like, I mean, if you're, whether you're, you don't have to be in the anime manga sphere, but if you're, especially if you're in the anime manga sphere, even if you cannot stand the sight of Goku, your favorite creator loved him.
Yeah.
And again, you can look at Fukuchi, whose stuff is diametrically opposed from Dragon Ball as you could possibly get. But this guy was so emotional over Toriyama's passing that he had to take a day off of Twitter. And I was telling Colton that many times during this Sunday questionnaire, like if they asked what's your biggest fear, his answer would always be something happening to Twitter. So the fact that this man took a day off from possibly his favorite thing ever to mourn this man, like, that just tells you just how much his legacy, like, another Sunday artist, Mitsuhashi Kaito, who drew Ryoko, he hasn't tweeted in, like, 2 years, but he came back to tweet a Goku drawing.
Yeah, and it was a pretty good one at that.
Yeah, it's like, all of these things are, like, and even now I'm looking, just kind of browsing Twitter, and that one tweet is going, and these are people who have probably never read Ryoko, and they can recognize that this is really good artwork, because I'm seeing people are retweeting it still now, 2 days later.
Wow.
So, yeah, I know we've talked a ton about like Dragon Ball's future, and I know we're running long in the mouth now, but it's just, man, Toriyama. I mean, not even just Dragon Ball, but just in general, this guy has been a creative like dynamo, and he's just so humble about it, you know?
Yeah, it's like, it's no, again, it's no hyperbole to say that I think Toriyama was one of the most important people who ever lived. Genuinely, like his contributions to, again, just wider pop culture in like multiple different mediums, I think really speak for themselves.
Yeah, no, I mean, totally. There is somebody out there that's been touched by a Dragon Ball. I keep saying Dragon Ball. And that's just the thing. He's just so associated with Dragon Ball that it's easy to forget that he's just Sonic the Hedgehog, Mario, all of the different things we've stated today, that not just Dragon Ball, but Dr. Slump, Sandland, like all of these things, that his drawings of motorcycles and mechanics and stuff like that. And just, I mean, I've actually met people who do not like Dragon Ball, but love One Piece. And I just have to look at them and just kind of be like, just stare at them motherfuckingly and be like, really?
Without Dragon Ball, I don't think we'd have One Piece. Or at least not One Piece in its whatever form it's in now, you know?
Yeah, I forgot to mention it, but Judah Tsutoya even straight up said that Sonic 2 may not exist in the form it does now if it were not for Toriyama. And a lot of people could argue that Sonic 2 is where the series kind of started finding its footing.
Yeah, that's wild to think about.
So I think I agree with you that Toriyama might just be that guy.
Yeah, I guess one of the last things I could talk about maybe before we wrap up here soon is that, you know, I think it's no exaggeration. To get kind of personal a little bit, I think it's no exaggeration to say that, like, because, you know, we haven't had a chance to record the show in a while, again, unfortunately, just due to a lot of things getting in the way. But since we've started up the show, Sakaki and I genuinely have, like, bonded more than we ever have in, like, God, I want to say like the 7 or 8 years we've known each other at this point.
Yeah, I don't even remember when we first met.
I think it was in 2016.
I don't want to turn this into us gushing about each other, but you're like Toriyama to me, where you just always seem to felt like you've been there. I don't even think about it anymore, where it's like, damn, there was a time where I didn't know Colton. It's just like, yeah, I always knew him.
It just feels like we've been friends forever, you know?
Honestly.
The point of me bringing up mine and Sakaki's friendship is that, you know, before doing this show, you know, we would kind of, like, hit each other up every once in a while or whatever. And, I mean, I hate to admit it, but, like, most of our interactions came from the one or two times we would, like, guest on a show or something, like via podcasting. And that basically accelerated after that Manga Mavericks episode we did about Dragon Ball, which was, like, collectively, like, 6 hours of us talking about it between, like, two recordings. And those recordings are important because that was basically the trigger that caused me to like start up this show and kind of caused Sakaki to get back into the franchise in particular. And like I said, we haven't been really recording as much lately, but like no matter how consistent or inconsistently the show comes out, it's sort of because of Toriyama that we've kind of become even better friends, like genuinely. Like without this show, I don't know if we would have started like hanging out as much as we do now every week.
Yeah, I mean, and even that came from you. It was a Dragon Ball movie that you were trying to stream. Like, our first stream was a Dragon Ball thing.
Yeah, Dead Zone.
Dead Zone, yes. And you were just like, we spent the night trying to, you couldn't stream it, so I ended up having to stream. I downloaded it and streaming it, and they were just like, oh, streaming's actually kind of fun. Then we moved to JoJo, and from there, we've just been streaming almost every, like, I spend more time with you than, like, most of my, like, other friends, so, which I'm definitely not complaining about, but, like, it's just funny to think about. It all started from Dragon Ball, essentially.
Yeah, like, Dragon Ball and Toriyama's works have genuinely, like, brought us closer together, and, like, that's not very different from a lot of other people's experiences. Like, friendships have genuinely been, like, I have other friends who, like, Sakaki, like, my other lifelong friends, like, one of them I even live with currently, who, when I first met them back in high school, that was kind of how we started bonding. Like, one of our first conversations with each other was us talking about the Dragon Ball video games that we played as kids and, like, you know, talking about, I wish I could remember what it was, because it was really funny how, like, because I think in Budokai Tenkaichi 3, you can combine certain, like, power-ups to make your finishing moves that much more powerful. Like, for example, we bonded over the fact that in that game, when you play as, like, normal Goku, like, start of Z Goku, Saiyan Saga Goku, I guess, where, you know, he's just learning the Kaioken, he's just learning the Spirit Bomb. Like, we bonded over the fact that, oh, in order to make the Spirit Bomb more powerful, we have to, like, put him in Kaioken mode or whatever. Like, it just devolved into us, like, talking about, like, the different combos we could do and, like, you know, that was, like, one of the first things we ever bonded over. Like, Dragon Ball genuinely has brought me, like, some of the best friends I've ever had. And that's something I really have to thank Toriyama for. Like, it is kind of because of him that, like, you know, I'm friends with a lot of the people that I am. And at the end of the day, that's powerful shit.
Yeah, no. I mean, like, that was a lot of what we were in high school. You know, I don't know most of these people anymore, but, like, that used to be the most fun at high schools, talking about Dragon Ball after watching it on Toonami. We'd all get around the lunch table and talk about what we think is going to happen next, who's going to win, and all of that. And yeah, those are fun times.
Yeah.
Like, as much as most of my high school career sucked, that was one time I look fondly back on and just, like, yeah, I miss it. That time, I really wish I could go back to a time where I didn't know what was going to happen next. And that I could just be like, oh man, I didn't think that this guy was going to end up fighting this guy, or that fight was going to end up like this. We all collectively lost our shit when Trunks came and defeated Frieza in, like, one go.
Yeah.
That was a beautiful time, honestly.
Man, yeah.
But yeah, before we end up talking for another 5 hours about how we're going to miss Toriyama, I mean, I guess what we're just trying to sum up here is that we're going to miss Toriyama. I don't think it's an exaggeration to say that nobody's going to do it the same way he did, which I don't mean that in the sense that nobody can do it better, but I just mean nobody's going to do it the same way.
No, like, no, there's no shortage of creative people out there, you know, mm-hmm. But like, there's only one Toriyama, and
yeah,
that's all there ever be is one. I don't think we're ever going to see somebody like him again.
No, I just don't. I mean, in the way that his storytelling is just never lacking in whimsy.
Mm-hmm.
I've come to just really appreciate that. Like, going through Dragon Ball again and seeing Sandland in theaters, like, that is the one thing I could take away about Toriyama, is that his work is just very whimsical, and you just don't see that much nowadays.
No. And, like, you know, for all the criticisms people can lobby at him and his work, especially with Dragon Ball, about, like, how haphazard the writing can kind of be and, like, whatever inconsistencies might pop up or whatever, those things I think are fun to talk about. And I would even say, like, oh, I can kind of understand to an extent if you're real picky about, you know, the mechanics of storytelling in general, like, maybe those get on your nerves. If you're a CinemaSins type, like, you can't help it. Like, some people are just kind of wired that way, even if I personally don't agree with viewing stories that way. But, like, I think it really says a lot about Toriyama that no matter how haphazard his writing can be, I don't think it mattered to a lot of people in the long run because you could tell he was having fun.
Yeah. I mean, even yesterday, I won't let this go on too long. Or was it yesterday? Yeah, it was yesterday morning where I kind of asked for the first time, like, how does the Kamehameha wave work? And then, like, you had to stop for a minute and be like, I don't think I know or care.
I just never thought about it. You put your hands together and blue energy comes out. I never put more thought into it than that. It's like King Crimson. It just works.
It just works. Yeah. No, I mean, like, and I didn't ask the question to be a CinemaSins type. It just popped into my head where it's just like, okay, like, I mean, in Dragon Ball Dragon Ball doesn't spend a lot of time talking about how the techniques actually work. But that one's so iconic, you'd think that at some point Toriyama would have been like, okay, so it's summoning ki and blah, blah, blah. No, throughout the entire, and I love that. And I'm not even saying it in a way that I'm trying to criticize it, but I kind of love the fact that we could go this entire franchise, and no matter how much people might talk about the writing and stuff, nobody ever asks that question. I feel like I've never seen anybody ask, how does it work? And it wasn't, again, I'm not trying to be critical of it. It just popped into my, maybe because we were watching it way too late. And my sleep-addled brain just voiced, it said the loud part quiet. I mean, the quiet part loud, where it's just like, I just asked the question. And I love that your response is pretty much what makes Toriyama amazing. I don't know and I don't care. Like, how many other authors, storytellers can you say that about, that it doesn't bother you a little bit? And I'm sure since then you haven't thought about it again.
No, I'm probably never going to think about it again.
And I'm probably not either, but like, if it were somebody else without the whimsy and charm that Toriyama has, it would bother me.
Yeah, like, this is a Jujutsu Kaisen where, like, there's a clear, somewhat convoluted way that these techniques are supposed to work, and you're meant to kind of learn about the mechanics of how all this bullshit is supposed to work. No, Dragon Ball's simple. It's just beam comes out of Goku's hand. That's all you need to know.
Yeah, and that's it. And I feel like nobody's ever questioned that.
No, never. Even with One Piece, there's like a mechanic to the Devil Fruits, you know?
Yeah, there's ways the Devil Fruits work with, I mean, like, Oda's gone through, even if some of them are bullshit, at least Oda has gone through an effort of explaining them. And I don't want to make it sound like that series that do explain their mechanics are bad. Honestly, that's, I mean, it depends, but like, and I feel like that is important sometimes to get to understand the characters. But in the case of Toriyama's works, it's just, you don't care. You just love being in a moment with these characters so much that you don't really think about, oh, okay, this, it doesn't turn into a JoJo fight where the powers are super specific to a point that, you know, it's just, they just work. And whether you're reading Dragon Ball or anything else, it's just anything that he's done, there's just a simplicity to the story that you could just turn your mind off and just enjoy it. As much as Toei gets shit about the pacing of anything to do with the original Z, like, I didn't realize that I had watched, like, 6 episodes. Like, I watched the entirety of the second half of the Cell games in, like, basically 2 days. And I didn't walk away from saying, oh, God, this again. Like, by the time the episode ended, I was just kind of like, oh, I need to see the next one.
I mean, it's probably worth mentioning that I think what makes Toriyama so special is that before he started up Dragon Ball, a manga that started off as kind of a linear gag comedy manga, whatever you want to call it, that eventually turned into like one of the best action comics ever made. Toriyama before that had a lot of experience with writing gag and comedies, like with Dr. Slump and a lot of his other one-shots and stuff, even sprinkled before and after. Like, I think it's because he comes from that gag background that he can kind of get away with, like, because, you know, this is the same man who created a character who is a little girl robot who, if she punches the earth, she can crack it in half. Kind of all logic is out the window.
And let's not forget that Vegeta was defeated by this very same girl.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think you just nailed it. Like, if we were to, as a final note to this recording, that's the best way to put it. Toriyama's just a master of the storytelling just because he doesn't take things too serious. Everything about him is just easy breezy. He doesn't take it too seriously. Even when you, and I'll probably talk more about this when we get to these episodes, but again, even watching Dragon Ball Z in Japanese versus the English one, there's still this sense of just like wonderment about the series. It's not taking itself too seriously, even in the midst of like the world being in peril against Cell. it doesn't feel like a totally different series afterwards where they're just talking about how Goku's like, man, Goku's, I've never heard anybody be so happy about being dead. It's just that energy that he has, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Like, I know for some people, it kind of rubs them the wrong way how, like, the series kind of goes from Gohan unlocked a new transformation due to the loss of innocence from seeing, you know, this giant bug monster kill somebody right in front of him to he's a tokusatsu superhero in high school. Isn't that kind of wacky? Like, I know some people take a lot of issue with, I guess, with that change in tone, but that's just kind of what Dragon Ball is all about. Because every once in a while, Dragon Ball can kind of dabble into a little bit of drama, but it's that ability to go from that to lighthearted whimsy that I think makes Toriyama's, not just Dragon Ball, but Toriyama's work so just like effortlessly timeless.
Yeah, exactly. No, I mean, you know, drop the mic, man. You just, you nailed it. That's really it. And I would even argue that the drama side of things, I know people like to focus upon that, and that's fine. I would argue that sense of whimsy is still always there.
Yeah.
Like, even from that transition from teen Gohan to, well, slightly older teen Gohan, I don't feel like, I mean, I remember reading the manga. It didn't feel strange. It didn't feel like, oh, man, he's jerking us around. No, it felt like, oh, this is just more Dragon Ball. You know, this is, I've come to expect it from this. I just feel like there has just been, and to be fair, yeah, that's just how it's advertised a lot. I mean, both in Japan and here, I don't want to make it sound like it's just Funimation's fault. Like, this is very much Toei deliberately advertising, like, look at the power creep and these supervillains and going into space and fighting them. Don't worry about that adventure stuff. That's, you know. And I feel like Toriyama never lost that whimsy. Because you see, as soon as he got involved with the franchise again, you have, like, I mean, I haven't seen Battle of Gods yet, have I? No, I don't think I have. But, I mean, the fact that, like, I know the story is still just about Goku fighting a giant god cat over food.
Yeah.
And, yeah. Like, I feel like that is what Dragon Ball's essence is at the end of the day. And there's nothing wrong with it if you just like it, that it's just two dudes fighting each other, you know, punching each other. But at the end of the day, that's what it is, ultimately.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think you, even just going to like the Buu arc where he's turning people into candy and eating them. I mean, come on. You can try to ignore it, but it's there. It's there.
God, yeah. Yeah. Now here comes the hard part of the show where I don't really know like how to end this other than, again, I'm happy to report that I am feeling a little better compared to, you know, at the time of this recording, you know, last Thursday night or last Friday in general. I'm feeling a little better, but again, we're going to feel the shockwaves of this passing, I think, for a very long time. It's like I said earlier, like, I think there are still some people that are grieving, and that's totally valid. I think I kind of mostly over mine, but again, it's going to be one of those things where, like, there are going to be times throughout the day, you know, at least every couple of days where it's going to pop into my mind, and I'm going to get a reminder of, oh, shit, that's right, he is gone. It's going to be weird living in a world post-Toriyama. I just can't, I still can't even really fathom what that's going to be like. But at the same time, it's like, I'm just so happy that he existed. I'm so happy that we have just such a breadth of work that he created or had a hand in creating that, you know, was left to him by us that we get to enjoy for the rest of our lives. And I can't think of enough for it. I can't think of enough for the stuff he's created. I can't think of enough for his stuff basically helping me make the friends that I've made. I can't think of enough for just everything.
Yeah. No, I mean, I share that sentiment. Like, honestly, to exist in the same time that he was, even though we never met him, the fact that we had him in our lives, from the beginning of our lives, honestly, is always something I'll feel blessed for. I mean, like I've said on Twitter that, I mean, I'm not the hugest Dragon Ball fan, you know, I'll admit that. But the fact that I love Tsubasa Fukuchi's works and finding out that Fukuchi was so inspired, but was it Fukuchi was inspired this man to be a mangaka, which is to say that if Akira Toriyama hadn't existed, maybe Fukuchi would be doing something else. And it's thanks to Fukuchi that I've met so many people, and it's thanks to Akira Toriyama that Fukuchi made the thing that made me want to go into translating to really get into the idea of just like, I can do, you know, I want to learn Japanese. I've learned Japanese. Now I want to read manga with it. It was all Fukuchi. And that's what's brought me to meet you and all my other friends online. And that all, even though it technically wasn't Toriyama himself who did this, but it was his influence. And I feel like I just owe him a lot for that.
Yeah, a lot of people owe Toriyama a lot. And there are some people that just don't know it. And that's really weird to think about.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like a lot of people are going to have to come to that reckoning, especially the people who probably don't care for his pool of work, which, again, you know, we're both not saying that that's a bad thing. If you don't, I mean, that's fine. But I just feel like with his passing and it spreading around the world, how much people meant to him, I feel like there is going to be a reckoning for some people when they realize, wow, yeah, something he did make did influence me and did influence me in some way.
Mm-hmm. Man, yeah, I'm sorry. I'm really struggling. I mean, I don't know if there's really that much else to say other than you just cannot thank this man enough. And I genuinely hope that he's in a better place. And I hope that he can finally rest. And I just hope he knew. For as humble as he was throughout his career, I really, really hope he knew how much people loved his work and cared about him to an extent.
Yeah. Yeah, I get the idea from some of his interviews and, you know, even this last message he sent that I feel like he did have a realization that people really do adore him. And the fact that he always seemed very humble about it is just, it just feels like, it feels very much in character for the guy that created Goku.
For sure. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, as for us, hopefully we'll be back soon with we're definitely going to continue watching Dragon Ball. We're going to power through it, and we're even more hyped to watch Dragon Ball. You know, it hasn't changed our feelings about it. In fact, it's intensified.
Yeah. Yeah. In case anybody who's listening to this hasn't listened to the latest Manga Mavericks podcast I put up a couple days ago. Yeah, this has really kind of kicked my ass into gear as far as like, man, I just want to keep talking about this for the rest of my life, or at least for as long as I can. I'm going to figure out a way for us to come back soon. Again, I can't promise that I'm going to be as consistent as I want, but it's going to be one of those things where I'm sorry ahead of time if we continue to have sort of longish breaks in between episodes, but just know that like we're not going to stop this show basically until we have to. I want to keep this up for as long as possible. I want to keep talking about, I guess you could say the best way for us to celebrate Toriyama's life is to just continually talk about his work and never shutting the fuck up about it, because I think he at least deserves that much.
Yeah, honestly, that's the best thing we can do. Like, it's just to keep a time capsule of his stuff going by talking about it, examining it, and just overall just enjoying it.
Yeah.
Well, no matter how you said it best, like, you said it best by quoting Oda, which is like, a man is only dead when he's forgotten. And we're going to try our damnedest to make sure we don't forget about Toriyama.
I personally think that's impossible at this point.
I mean, that it is, but we want to thank everybody, too, for following us along on this adventure. We don't know where this will take us, but we're definitely dedicated to seeing it through as long as we can.
For sure. It's like I've said before, we're going to cover every Dragon Ball cartoon ever. And a part of me is kind of like, I don't know if we'll succeed in that, but I kind of want to try my best.
Yeah, I definitely want to take this as far as we possibly can.
Yeah, some would say to go even further beyond.
We're going to keep podcasting until we hit Ultra Instinct.
It'll just come second nature to us.
Episodes come out before we're done recording them.
they're gonna throw stray microphones our way. We're just gonna dodge them effortlessly.
Dodge and grab them.
I really want to end this by saying not just rest in peace, Toriyama. Obviously, hope you're in a better place. But also, hey, Sakaki, thanks for doing the show with me.
Yeah, no, thanks for dragging me kicking and screaming back into this fold. I don't remember why exactly you asked me to do the Manga Maverick show. I do remember kind of being hesitant about it because I was like, I put Dragon Ball behind me. I found God. I don't want to go back to Satan. But I'm glad just that you're around, man. I mean, for it's kicking and screaming, I'll admit it, because I'm just hesitant to do anything because I'm lazy as fuck. But like, thanks for finding me, making me do the Gintama thing. I'm like making me do Gintama, then putting me on your other shows, and then having me do this and Ippo, and fun times. Like I wouldn't. This is truly probably the best thing. One of the things I look forward to is recording stuff. I at the time I usually don't because I'm tired from work and I'm like, oh god, I don't want to talk. I just want to sleep. But then I get on these podcasts with you, and I'm just like, I just can't shut up.
No, like. Yeah, I'll admit, sometimes I've been there too, where it's like, oh man, I am kind of tired, and I know this is going to be probably a slightly longer show than normal sometimes, but then we start doing it, and it's like, you can't get us to stop sometimes.
No. And look at this. We said that this would be an hour long. We're about two.
Yep.
So. So yeah, it really is a thing. But yeah, let's get the fuck out of here.
no, but again, one last time, thank you so much, Toriyama sensei, for all your work. You being alive genuinely made the world a better place, and I sincerely believe that.
Yeah, thank you so much.
And I guess, as always, we'll see you guys another day for another adventure.
Bye.